Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 27, 2013. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, it's going to be one of those shows where you talk about where you went all over the country and looked at poker rooms so I get to catch up on my napping.
I didn't go all over the country this time. But you know what the funny story about this trip was? We were off yesterday, and the little bunch of guy was like, car fine for you? I'm like, yeah, absolutely, it's great. And he checks mileage, he's like, I guess it was, 661 miles. And my wife started laughing, and because like 661 miles, that's us not getting use out of a rental car on our trips. I've had a couple that had tipped out of 2,000, so but that guy was impressed apparently. So.
Wow.
But yeah, short little trip. I just went back home to Ohio, and finally got to see a casino in my hometown of Columbus. I've been very excited. That ever since they announced this, that they were building one there, and then you know, I stopped up when they're in the middle of building it, talking to the great poker manager up there, Matt Dodd, and then finally I got up there now to actually see it in person, and very nice. You know, the interesting thing, people were asking me about it when I was up there, that people hadn't been there yet. You know, what's it like? And I'm like, you know what, I'm going to say something that's going to sound negative, and I really don't mean it that way. It's just that. The Hollywoods, they really have perfected making their casinos look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. You know, which is smart, you know, for a big company. You know, if you've solved the mousetrap once, why reinvent it again the second time, right?
Yeah.
So it's very nice. Really enjoyed it. There were a lot of tables. They had good games going when I was up there. But you know what? I guess what I'd tell you is, if you've gone to, you know, Hollywood, North Kansas City, or any of the other Hollywoods, it looks very similar. At least the newer Hollywoods. So that's probably a good way of just explaining what it's like if you haven't been there, but you've been to one of those other Hollywoods.
So when somebody says, "What's it like?" and you can say to them, "Have you been to a Hollywood casino?" and they say yes, and then you've been there.
Exactly. Right, that's the way to say it.
And it's smart because it's branding. I mean, you wouldn't want to go to a Hollywood casino and then say, oh, I love Hollywood casinos. There's a new one being built down the street. I'm going to go. Then you go there and it's like decorated like, you know, I don't know, 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
you don't want that. You want the Hollywood experience. So it makes sense to keep that theme throughout. And that's cool. So plus it's brand new, which is always nice.
Right. Of course. It's not set yet because, again, the Ohio Gaming Commission is really trying to work their way through a bunch of stuff, you know, being a newborn gaming commission, as all of them frustrate us with as they learn to walk.
Yeah.
But it looks like there might be a series there at Hollywood Columbus in December, and then, of course, they'll be doing something bigger for the Hollywood Poker Open next year. But right now, things are going really well in Columbus.
Yeah, it's so weird to see that there's one in your hometown like that.
Yeah, very crazy. And but you know, every time I go back, Columbus changes a little bit. So now it's going to be a casino, so I guess I should just get used to the fact it's going to change every time I go back. but from there, I drove down to Cincinnati, and actually it was a great time to visit the new Horseshoe Cincinnati, first time I've been there, because the circuit was going on
right. When
I was down there. And you know, the funny thing is, I don't know if you remember this, but back when they were building it, there was a story, I believe the Cincinnati Inquirer wrote, talking about how just the fact that they were building the casino there had dramatically dropped the crime rate.
Crime rate, right, I remember
that. Particular area, right?
Yep.
So, my wife and I got a hotel in the downtown area, about a mile from the stadiums, and, you know, we went to the Packers game and the Reds game one night. But it was like less than a half a mile from the Horseshoe. And a very easy walk. And I got to tell you, all the way walked there, and I'm like, how could this have ever been a crime-ridden area? Because obviously the casino is brand shiny new, and really it's probably the most striking Horseshoe I've been to. I mean, from the outside at least. The inside is gorgeous too, but the outside, when you walk up to it, it's like, wow, this is really nice. But you're looking around, and the buildings around it are not dilapidated. It just looks like any other part of Cincinnati. So I don't know how much of that has quickly changed since they started construction, or what it was about that particular area, just a half a mile from our hotel, which is right smack downtown, that was ever crime-ridden. Hmm. Kind of an interesting thing. I was telling my wife that, and she's like, really? This looks, you know, completely normal, and I don't know what non-crime-ridden looks like, but, you know, you have this vision of, you know, boarded up houses and stuff, you know, and yeah. It just wasn't that way, so.
That's cool.
You know, we just talked about how the Hollywoods all kind of look the same. The Horseshoes, I do notice this, the Horseshoes all look very similar to each other, but they all have their own twist of some sort. And I was talking to the poker room director down there about it, and he was very appreciative that I noticed that, because they have some really nice artwork in the Horseshoe Cincinnati, the actual poker room, that I haven't seen in other Horseshoes. Plus, you know, they have the normal big World Series photos of that, like, quasi-sepia tone kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Normally see. But it had some real nice piece of artwork, and I'm a big art fan, so I really noticed that. And they did say that, you know, they do try to make all the rooms a little bit different, and he just came from Horseshoe Hammond. So, you know, obviously he's been at one of the biggest ones. So that was kind of cool, I thought. Now, of course, the circuit was going on, and I got to say this. I've been to a bunch of tournaments, and I know you had too. And there's not a lot of them that I've been to that I really like the setup of the tournament area. It always seemed like it was done the best I could, but not beautiful. Perfect. Mm-hmm. And this one I thought was really cool. It had, you know, it was in a big ballroom, which helps, obviously. But they had it broken into four quadrants with big aisles in between, you know, both north and south and east and west. So plenty of room for people to walk during, you know, bathroom breaks and things.
Yeah.
And then they had like a little, I call it like a final table area. I didn't ask them whether that's what the final table is. It might just be a satellite tournament area, but at the apex of the room. And then, of course, the ringed around, they had the, you know, workspace for the staff and the media.
Don't be throwing around big words like apex, all right?
I'm not even sure that's the right word. It just sounds pretty cool.
That's why I don't want you to use it, because I don't know if that's the right way, but go ahead.
But plenty of walking room, and it was really comfortable. I thought it was a really comfortable room. Plenty of TVs and clocks, which I think is important. I mean, there's nothing that drives me more insane during a tournament than not having a clock where I can see it no matter what seat I'm at.
Yeah.
Certainly not a problem there. And then huge, big projection screens, you know, to sports on and stuff, so you can watch it while you're playing, too. So it was a really comfortable setup, and then right outside they had a little snack area where you could order food and drinks and stuff. And then right outside that was a, you know, kind of a balcony porch with some nice furniture where, you know, if you wanted to smoke, you could go smoke, or if you just wanted to get, I guess, what passes for fresh air on a smoking porch. And it was really nice too. I mean, I just thought it was a really, really nice setup. So, you know, they ran into some troubles with numbers the first day because it overlapped with the big Oktoberfest celebration down there. And, of course, you know, the Packers were in town. But the midweek ones when I was there were doing, I think they're going to finish strong. And then finished the trip to going down to Louisville and poke my head in the Horseshoe Southern Indiana game, which I've been to before. And what I think was interesting to me, that I was talking to the manager there, is that, you know, when the circuit schedule came out, I think we all kind of noticed it looked like they kind of purposely planned the swing, you know, where the circuit starts at Horseshoes, Cincinnati. As soon as that's over, it moves to Southern Indiana. As soon as that's over, it moves up to Hammond, up in Chicago. And I think they kind of confirmed that was kind of the idea, is hoping to get, you know, a full month of play out of players.
Yeah.
Now, start there, 2-hour drive there, 4-hour drive there, and really do it. But, you know, no one knows for sure right now. So they're liking to see, it will be interesting to see whether people travel from Cincinnati down to Southern Indiana and then up to Hammond, or, as some people are talking about, you know, hey, do you take a break somewhere? If you take a break, it's probably going to be at the expense of Southern Indiana. You know, you're going to go to Cincinnati and take a couple weeks off and then go to Chicago. But if it works out, I think it was absolutely genius of the scheduling.
It's going to be so difficult to know if Hammond suffers at all because it's so successful every year. You know, that's the one that just shatters the records every year. You know, and then if it's hard to break a record every year. It's hard to always surpass your numbers from before. So if they don't, they might point to this and say, see, this is what happens, when you'll never really know, because that's the problem with being successful all the time, is the first time you're not, you blame everything else.
So yeah,
it'd be interesting to see if that's what their numbers are, if their numbers will go up higher. I don't know. But you're right, Southern Indiana is sandwiched right between there, and that could hurt.
Well, we'll see. They definitely very interested to see how it turns out. And, you know, the other thing that I'm interested to see how it turns out is the full tilt repayment process.
I love the segues that we automatically force into these things. It's fantastic.
That was not forced at all. That was completely natural. But, you know, last week I talked about how, you know, I got my email and I thought I had like 13 cents, right?
Yeah.
And I was just going to ignore it. And then you encouraged me, hey, Scott, why don't you do it just to stick it to the man? And then I'm like, you know what, that'd be great to frame that check on the wall of my office. It's just kind of a guffaw kind of moment in our poker lives, right?
Yeah.
So I went through the whole process. The good news, turns out I had $7.74 coming back to me.
Man, how could you forget about $7?
I know, it's a value meal with a biggie drink. I totally could have ran another sit and go on that.
Oh, man, that's some serious freaking cheddar there, and you forgot
absolutely
about it.
Absolutely. But then, you know, every rainbow has a rain attached to it, and the rain here is the money is going to be sent to us via electronic transfer, so no check for me to frame on the wall.
Oh.
I mean, I guess I can take a picture of my bank statement and frame it, right? But, yeah, you had asked me last week whether I'd read through it, and I hadn't at that point, but I obviously did. So just real quickly, the description says that, you know, once everybody files their claim, which I think they have until the end of October, maybe, it could be wrong, or early November, to do it, and then they'll figure out how much money that goes out. If the settlement amount has that much money, then everybody gets 100% of what's owed to them. If not, then they prorate everyone. So.
So you might end up getting 13 cents after all.
Yeah, I might get 13 cents after all. Absolutely.
Man, $7.74. How could you not remember that?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's good, though. I mean, now I definitely feel better about bringing it up because, I mean, you know, that's pretty good. I got you a meal.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd ignored it and you just let it go, and then someone else would have gotten your money, and that's just not right. So,
it's almost enough for me to make a river bet in a 4-8 game.
There you go, man. So you just have to play 1-2 that day, that's all. Well, you know, yesterday we found out that they have come up with the top 10 finalists for the Hall of Fame, the World Series of Poker Hall of Fame nominees, or Poker Hall of Fame, I guess, really, is what they are. And the list is just so impressive. I mean, I guess some of the names you'd have to be a pretty big fan to know, but you know what? I mean, it's an incredible,
or at least
list.
A regional fan, I think. Is
yeah,
what
I mean,
there's some names that are huge in some other countries that maybe are not as well known.
Exactly. But every one of these players, you look at the list and you're like, they're gonna get in the Hall of Fame someday. So just put them in. Why does it gotta be two at a time?
Just put them in.
But Chris Bjorn, Humberto Brenes, David Chu, Thor Hansen, Jennifer Harmon, Mike Matisseau, Tom McAvoy, Carlos Mortensen, Scotty Wynn, and Huckleberry Seed. Those are your finalists. Now, a lot of these names were on it again last year, of course, because they didn't get in. But of all these players, who do you think deserves the most?
Well, I think we're always been in agreement on this, that Tom McAvoy should be in. And to use your word, a travesty.
It is a travesty. It's not a tragedy. It's a travesty. He doesn't get it.
I don't know if it's a travesty.
Well, in relation, we're not talking about famine. We're talking about in poker. In poker world, it's a travesty in this context that a person who not only won the world title, was a common everyday guy when he started, won multiple titles, World Series titles, changed everyone's health in the fact that he made every poker room basically smokeless, smoke-free. And he's written every book, so he's taught everybody how to play poker. I mean, yeah. If anybody on this list deserves it, it's him. I mean, the other people, yeah, they're popular because they're on TV. They're popular because they scream at people on TV. They're popular because they're women and they're in high-stakes games. But only four of these guys have won the world title. And McAvoy has the credentials that are just as good as any of these other guys. And he's been around long. And they talk about longevity. He's 68, and he's in his fifth decade of playing this game. And he's still at the top of his game. I mean, yeah, you don't see him at the final table of the main event every year or something, but the man is still doing it for a living. And he even won that cup, that Binion's Cup, a little while ago. So he proved he still could play. You know what I mean? I just think it's wrong that he's not in the hall. You know?
No, I'm not going to disagree with you at all.
And But I'd like to see every one of these people in the hall. Yeah, I would. I mean, if I had to pick two, though, I would pick either Scotty Wynn and Tom McAvoy or Huckleberry Seed and Tom McAvoy. I think the world champions who have this... If you take everything and equal it up with all the other people, and they have a world title, they deserve to go in before anybody else. I mean... Well, I had to find something to argue with you about.
Yeah.
All right, so Bjorn has, like, the most cashes up other than Helmuth in the World Series. Okay, well, that's great, but it doesn't necessarily... Trump, somebody who has a decent amount of cash, has more bracelets and a world title. You know what I mean? Same with Humberto Brenes. You go all the way down the line with all these people. You know?
Well, I mean, I think the problem with this discussion every year is that you're right. All these folks probably deserve to be in there. All these folks will probably be in there at some point. Although I'm beginning to worry about our friend Tom here. You know, he's getting up in there. I mean, he's been on the ballot, the last 20 years.
Since it's been inception, maybe.
And still hasn't made it in, so... it gets into this, well, you know, this is... I mean, I hate to knock down any of these people, because they've all done amazing things. And they're all uniquely qualified to be in the hall, so it's a matter of who gets in, and I guess we should clarify that there's no limit to how many people get in. Just the last couple of years, it's been one or two, right?
No, it's two, it says.
Is it two?
Yeah, it's two. So they can only pick two every year. So that's what's really driving me crazy, is that we're going to keep seeing these same names on there for at least the next 5 years, because they can only do two at a time, and then more people will become eligible. Once you become 40, you know, pretty soon Ivy's going to be 40, and he's going to be a guaranteed, you know what I mean? And pretty soon all these other players, you know, it's just, I don't know. I like Mattisell, he deserves it, obviously. Thor Hansen, sure. I mean, they all deserve it, but when you have the final four names there are all world champions and have multiple bracelets and have multiple titles and proved longevity, just put them in. What are you waiting for?
Yeah.
You know?
But, I mean, you can't put 10 in every year.
I know, but...
dilutes it a little bit.
Four, maybe.
But you're right. I forgot about the two. The two is an arbitrary number, I think. I think we talked about this last year, right? It should be like baseball, where, you know... you're on 75% of the ballot.
The percentage.
So if you're a particularly strong class, then more people get in. If you're a particularly weak class, then one or no one gets in.
That's right. I mean, they still can only vote for two when they vote, but the percentage, if you're on a percentage, 75%, you're in.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll be waiting with bated breath.
Yeah, I'm hard-pressed to come up with my second one.
Yeah, it's to me, it's a tie between Huck and Scotty Wynn. Between who I would pick. I mean, Harmon's a great representative, and of course, you know, being a woman and shedding all of those stereotypes and everything and crushing the cash games for decades, you know, the biggest cash games in the world, you know, she's pretty close too. And Mattisell, like, he's done a lot. So, I mean, it's tough.
Well, you know, one of the considerations for getting on is, for a non-player, is, you know, promoting the game. And I think that really should extend to the players as well, too. And at least when it comes down to the final determination. So, to that extent, I think Humberto Brenes has really elevated poker in his part of the world.
Sure.
Probably the same with Chris and Thor as well, too.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, I think that should be something that should be considered as well, too. But I'm going to go with Tom and Huck.
Huck, yeah. Yeah, that's a good...
But I could be easily talked out of Huck for any one of the... Almost any one of the rest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you think about popularity, too, does that get weighed in there for popularity or not? Because Scotty Wynn's a very popular pro. You know, so is Mattisell, even though a lot of it's just for his antics. But, and Harmon too. So yeah, there's a lot of things. But I think I would go, Tom and Huck, and then Scotty if I had to go in top three. So, but it's it's fun because we've had conversations with pretty much everyone on this list, other than maybe one or two. I actually played 5-10 Raz with David Chu once. That was fun. And so I have affectionate for some of them too, like Mattisell and Harmon. Of course, McAvoy hugged my wife. Scotty Wynn, I played with him at Immokalee. He sat right across from me, had a good conversation with him. Huck Seed almost came to our home game. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff, there's a lot of reasons why I vote for these people other than just numbers, straight numbers. So, but we'll see what happens, and looking forward to it. All right, our listener spotlight. Each week we will spotlight a listener who has called our hotline, 813-448-1120, or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do a Call to Floor and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Antiup. You can check out J-Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. This comes from Dave, and he says, I was playing the daily tournament at the Seneca Niagara Casino. We're down to 14 players. Top 5 get paid. On the short stack with 4,300, blinds are 6-12 with a 200 ante. Nothing but rags for the last two orbits. There are 7 players at the table, and now I find myself in the cutoff with A7 off suit. There's one limper, and then I shove. The button thinks for a minute and calls. The limper folds, and the button turns over Ace-Jack. The board runs out, and he outkicks me with the jack. I barely had an orbit and a half left when I shoved all in. I'm pretty sure it was the right play, but should I have made a move earlier, even with rags?
Yes.
Yes.
Get that out there right away for all the people that are short stack ninja haters that listen to the show. How can you let yourself get that low, Scott? Same thing, Dave. Yes, that is what you should have done. You should have shoved earlier. But again, it's tough to say because it depends on the situation and stuff. And what I'll say about this particular situation is I probably would not have made this move. And the reason I wouldn't have made this move is because I see so many players short stack get knocked out with ace rag. Because anyone with an ace with a bigger stack is going to call you, and that means they have you dominated and you're dead to that one card. I would much rather make this move with a suited connectors, or even like a 9-6 or something weird that we have two live cards at least, or higher expectation of two live cards.
Yeah.
I think the A7 is just, it's just such a bad short stack push. And I don't know when he had, two hands before this. I probably wouldn't have waited much longer because really, where are we at down here? 200 ante. And probably have a little bit more time if he really had to. But I would have looked for a better... What I like about it is there was a limper in front, so he had some dead money. But I just wouldn't do it with A7.
No, here's the deal. To me, well, like you said, we don't know how he became the short stack. It could have been he lost a big hand before, and now he's put in his position. But it doesn't sound like that. It does sound like he was pretty tight and got dwindled down. At this point, when it's 1,200 as the big blind, a regular raise is going to be about 4,300. So yeah. all you're actually getting out of this is someone to call one raise. So that's right. You're not even going to get anybody to fold with any cards you put in. So absolutely should have done this sooner. I don't mind the ace part. You got to shove, and at least do it with an ace, because like you said, 200 every hand. You're in five hands, you're down to 3,300. Now it's barely even a raise. So I think that I don't mind the A7 shove. It's just when you did it. At least you were the first person to shove. It wasn't like you were calling a raise with your chips that were a shove.
Right, but I mean, what you said was a very good point. It was the fact that you don't have enough chips here to make this a thought.
Yeah.
For too many people at the table. And that's the problem, because at that point, anyone with any ace is going to call. Obviously, you would love it if it, A6 or below called you. But it would be different if you had 12,000.
Right.
Let's see here, and you shove. Now somebody's got to think about it. Even if they want to knock you out, they got to think about it. And they're probably not going to call you with ace-8, ace-9. They might, but they probably won't. But when it's, an extra bet, really, with all the dead money in there.
Yeah,
I got a call. So I want to have two live cards. I really do. And I think that's a weird thing at the end because, obviously, I like to cling on to the table as long as I can in these tournaments and not risk elimination. But at the same time, so you would think that you wouldn't want to do it with rags, as he says. But I find the rags so much more effective at that point because I know someone's going to call me. I know someone's going to call me. There's actually very little expectation when you have 4,300 and the blinds are 612 with a 200 ante that someone is not going to call when you shove.
Yeah, but the only thing that I would...
You want to back it up, that's when you need to think about it. Think about your chip stack. Am I at a chip stack now if I shove that somebody's going to think about, has to think about calling? Then you want to do that because then they're probably going to fold. There's a higher percentage of the time that they're going to fold and they're going to pick up all that, you know, the blinds, that's 1,800 plus, I don't know how many people at the table.
You're looking at doubling your stack right now.
Exactly. So you need to be at that point when you think it's less likely someone's going to call. When you get this low, though, you know when someone's going to call. So, you know, make sure it's a hand that you think you can win with. And why, you know, we ask 20 people on the street, oh, yeah, I'd love to have an ace. You know, if you get somebody to call a king-queen, great. But even then, that guy's got two live cards against your two live cards. So.
Yeah, you're only like 60-40. Like you said, though, I mean, there is a case for the ace just because you don't have to improve if they do call you the king-queen. You just have to hope they don't. And the other way around, you have to improve. You have to make a pair, and you're going to miss two out of three flops. And to me, lately, I've been playing a lot, and it seems like you can miss more than that. So I like having the idea of, okay, if this guy just says, oh, it's only a raise, I'll call with Jack-10. That's cool, because I know I don't have to improve to win now, and he has to improve. There's a lot more percentage on him than me, so... But, yeah, I think we should have gone a lot earlier with the shove. A lot of people get nervous, you know. They're so close to making that money. They're so close to making the final two. They don't want to put their life on the line with, you know what I mean? They want
to. Yeah, but we're down to 14 players right now, so yeah. We're not even close to the money. That's the other thing to think about, you know. And, of course, when you need to make that move, who knows? It could have been 20 players still in the tournament, so.
Yeah, you got to make that move earlier, get a decent stack so you can threaten people with the stack.
But I think that's the bottom line. That's really what I've been working on is paying attention to my chip stack and knowing, hey, where's my chip stack at to the point that I need to, somebody's going to have to think about calling my shove.
Yeah.
If I'm getting close to the point where they're not going to have to think, then I need to start shoving with whatever, you know?
Yeah. Get it over with and double up or go home.
Yep.
All right, we got a call of four.
Go ahead.
You want me to do it?
All right.
Well, we find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been. Email us at podcastandy@magazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Anti Up logo version. Use code ANTIUP for free shipping. This comes from Greg. He says, in a local poker game, the cards are dealt, and while the under-the-gun player is still looking at his cards, the next player folds. Another player goes all in and two more players fold. The end of the gun player then says, wait, I haven't acted yet. I'm all in. The player who previously had moved all in then says, well, if he's all in, I'm going to pull my chips back. Does that player get to pull his chips back, or does his all in stand?
Here's what Jody says. He said, this would be considered an action out of turn and is addressed by TDA rule number 38. A player who went all in out of turn should have their chips returned to them and would not be obligated to call the all in by the under the gun player. In this situation, it could be argued that the first player who was checking his cards while all this action took place should have a dead hand. I always take into consideration how much of the action is folding, which can happen very quickly, and how much is actual betting.
See, now, I obviously probably could have answered this one ourselves because we've gone through this a bunch of times ourselves. We know that guy gets his money back because the action changed from what it was, but... first of all, how slow is this under the gun player? I don't care how fast they're folding and all inning and calling and or whatever. How long does it take them to look at two cards?
Yeah.
Give me a break. But it's weird. I've never heard of that. His cards could be considered a dead hand while you.
Well, I mean, what's interesting is this was debated hotly at the TDA, and I believe the rule has been changed that where the under the gun player's hand would have been dead in this case because there was. One action with chips and then two folds. I could be wrong, but I think that's what it was now because they wanted to address this. Again, because this goes back to the whole thing at the TDA this year where they wanted to really stress player responsibility. And in this case, they really want to put the responsibility on this player to protect his actions. And obviously, there's a limit to what you can do. If the guy next to you decides he wants to go all in and announces all in, you can't stop him from saying that. You know, like, whoa, slow down. You know, he's going to say it, right? But then you need to immediately speak up and say, wait, I haven't acted yet. And hopefully the deal will stop the action at that point. Now, what's tough about this situation, I think, is when someone says all in, and I'm the next player and I've got crap, there's no thought, right?
Yeah.
Fold. I might even already been thinking I was going to fold. You know, had been one of those people looks at my cards earlier. So, you know, this whole all-in fold could have happened really in a couple seconds, really. And I don't know how you stop it at that point that quickly. But this is kind of the discussion I think some of us had before, too, about, you know, is the new rule a way for people to angle shoot as well, too? That, you know, hey, let's just, you know, all act very quickly. And the person that's going to suffer for it is going to be the guy that couldn't shut us up quickly enough.
Yeah, I mean, if I were the under-the-gun guy, realizing that he did pretty much act pretty slowly here, but when you're talking about holding people accountable for paying attention and do whatever, it's not that he wasn't doing that. He was just slow. So the person who folded first is a person who wasn't paying attention. He didn't realize the guy in his right
hadn't. Exactly.
So that's the guy who should be penalized. That's what bothers me about this. I realized the guy was slow, but there could have been any number of variables that made him not look at his card. I know I made the joke earlier, but you know, who knows what it was? Maybe the card stuck, or maybe it got shoved under the rail. You know how that happens sometimes when you're trying to grab it. And you know, I mean, there are any number of reasons why this guy didn't look at his cards as fast as the rest of us look at our cards, and now he's being hurt because the idiot next to him didn't pay attention and he folded. And then it started that what they like to call the sprinkler effect, where they
right,
go,
yeah.
They all just go automatically and. So I feel it's weird. It has to be a judgment. This is why we have four people. It's,
exactly.
You know,
right.
And that's why we always have that first rule, that rule number one, where what's best for the game and what's fair. So, but yeah, it's interesting. I never even thought about. He said it there too. He said it could be argued that he was checking his cards too slow while the action was going. He could have a dead hand, and you said that was brought up. So
yeah,
I've never had that happen in one of our tournaments, but that's something I never considered. Brutal. All right, we got a brand new O'Malley's move. Always like when that happens. Here comes part one, and we'll get back to you next week.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em cash game. This is our regular home game, so we've got a good handle on our opponents. Our image is an aggressive one, and we're usually successful in this game. We are trying to mix up our play tonight, though. We're seeing a lot of flops cheaply and trying to outplay our opponents after the flop. We're in the MP, down 100, with 200 in front of us. Under the gun folds, plus one calls, plus two folds, and we look down at the 7 of spades, 7 of diamonds. This is a good hand, so we limp. The MP2 calls, hijack folds, cutoff folds, button calls, small blind calls, big blind checks, and with $10 in the pot, the flop comes down the 7 of hearts, 6 of clubs, 4 of diamonds. This is a decent flop, and our hand is probably disguised pretty well. But something makes our spidey sense tingle as the small blind checks, and the big blind makes it $8 to go. He's a solid player who knows the game well. He currently sits with 75 more than what we started the hand with. Where did this bet come from? It's folded around to us, and we're quite puzzled. A check lead into this pot with so many to act behind him? Is there any question he's strong? We just have to figure out how strong. Hopefully not 8-5 strong. We make the call, not wanting to bloat the pot, and the rest of the table folds. There's roughly a quarter in the pot, and the turn is pretty much a blank. King of spades. He's first to act, and he leads out again, this time for 15. If this is a double-barrel bluff, kudos to him. We can only call here. So much for outplaying our opponents post-flop. With $56 in the pot, the river is the 5 of hearts. Ugh. But he checks. So any 3 and any 8 beat us. What's the play here?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Remember to send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's hand comes from Drew Cohen, one of our great listeners, came on one of our recent cruises, which, by the way,
yep,
go to antiupcruises.com and join us on one of our 7 upcoming cruises. And you too could be referred to as X, who came on one of our cruises on a future show. Alright, so Drew was playing a 1-2 Nolan Hold'em cash game. 9 players to the table. And he's on the button with Jack of Clubs, Jack of Spades, with 300 behind. Because the under the gun player is steaming! Oh. Just lost a big hand to a bad beat. He looks at his cards and shoves his remaining $65. Action folds around to a middle position player, takes a full minute to decide to call, and that player started the hand with 300 behind as well. We have no good read on him, and the action folds around to us.
All right, so it sounds like it's pretty common knowledge that this guy was steaming. And so if that's the case, then the middle position one could be calling with anything. I don't mind a call, but I have a feeling we're ahead, because it feel like if the guy had a hand better than Jack's, he might re-raise to isolate to just win that $65 and move on without any contention. So since he didn't, I might consider shoving here. Or I don't care that the guy's going to be covered. I mean, it seems like it's the right play. I might consider that. It just depends. You know, I can't imagine the guy who called having a better hand than Jack's. And I can't imagine him calling my shove if he has a hand better than Jack's. If he didn't have a hand, you know what I mean? If he had a hand that could beat Jack's, is the only way he could call me if I shove. That's how I feel. And if that's the case, I feel like he would raise to isolate this guy so that he wouldn't have someone else coming along to try to outflop him or whatever. So it just seems, unless he had something like pocket aces and he knew that one of us might be crazy enough to just call the $65 for no reason in a 1-2 game, I mean, that's 34 and a half big blinds. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah. So I feel like a raise might be better than just calling, because that 65 is dead money now, and the other guy's 65 is probably dead money, so you might as well want to, you might as well put 300 out there to get 130. I feel like I might actually just re-raise here and make it like 200 or 250 or 300 to go, just to isolate and get the dead money.
Yeah, I think this is always one of those more interesting situations where you have someone all in. So at this point, you know, the way it's been described, he's steaming, so we got to think that our hand is better with him. So now you got to make the decision: are you happy just winning that $65 from that guy? Or is there more value in trying to play the hand out with this other guy?
Yeah, because it's 130s in the pot already. You know, when it gets to you, that's half your stack. That's a huge improvement. If I can improve my stack 50% every time I want a pot, man, I'd be rich. So
right.
I'm happy with that 150 or 130. So I like the... You know, I don't mind it, but jacks are, like they always say, jacks are so hard to play. I mean, you know, okay, so what if you just call, and then it comes out with two overs to your jacks, and then the guy bets. Now you got to fold. If you shove, he's going to lay down that ace-10, you know, or whatever it is that he might have. So he could just have a pocket pair that's not very big, but knows that this guy shoved 65, and no one's going to want to call 65 unless they have a massive hand, so... He could have anything, really, but I don't think he could have anything better than Jack, so I'd like to just get all this money now and isolate.
Yeah, and the fact that it took a full minute, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it is for a 1-2, you know, to decide to call. Obviously, he didn't have aces or kings.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even queens, to be honest, I would think at that point, right? So,
right.
So we're probably ahead of him. So I guess the question comes down, if we're ahead of him, what's the best way to get more money out of him? We shove here, I think he's going to go away, right? If it took a full minute to decide to call 65, is he really going to call another whatever?
Well, you get a min raise, so I mean
200,
yeah,
you know?
I mean, if I don't think you can get more money out of this guy unless you see a flop, but then you're taking a huge chance that you're going to get out flopped and lose your whole stack. Why would I want to try to make another 130 when I can almost guarantee I'm going to win 130 by shoving, unless this guy gets lucky on me, the one under the gun guy? I feel like, yeah, I want to always extract money, but it's different when you're playing cash games. You know, if you're playing a regular hand, let's just start over and say somebody raises to six, you call, flop comes with your card, he bets, you call, turns blank, he checks, you bet, he folds. You've made $18. You know, you extract as much as you could out of the guy. So now you have a chance to get 130 on one play. You know, I don't need to worry about making more money on this hand. So I wouldn't go into this looking that way. It'd be one thing if you flopped a big situation and now you're trying to extract money out of somebody who clearly has the second best hand in your mind. This case is pre-flop, and it looks like you're not going to get more money out of this guy if you raise. And if you check, or if you just call, I mean, now you've got decisions to make when it comes out ace-king-7. So I don't think we can get more money out of this guy unless we call and are just a genius post-flop and get lucky. Right. So I would rather just isolate and shove.
Actually, I think this is a really great situation to be in with Jax here, isn't it? Because you're right, it's such a hard hand to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, the common cliche is either fold or shove with him. Obviously, I'm not folding here. So, you know, the more I think about it, there's not so much of a downside to shoving here. So we shove, and the other player gets out of the way. Then you're right, we're heads up for 100 and some bucks. I mean, our guy's steaming, so he could have aces and kings. It's possible, but it seems like we're probably going to win that. And if we just call, then we're risking that money that's already in the pot to try to get a little bit more out of the other guy. And it's going to force us to play our jacks for at least one more street, if not three more streets, which is the exact opposite thing you want to do with jacks, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, shoving here, I mean, either the guy's going to fold and we're heads up with a guy that we think is a lesser hand. The other guy calls us with a lesser hand and we have to, you know, fade. At that point, it doesn't matter because if we end up beating the second player, then we're going to make more on this hand, even if we lose to the main pot, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, really the only downside is if this the guy in the middle calls and gets what we believe lucky and catches up to us and takes the whole thing from us.
Yeah, I mean, he could have something like ace-queen or something, but it seems weird that he would have that and then take so long to call. Not saying he couldn't. I mean, you know, because it's not a made hand. But it just feels like we're ahead. And if we're ahead, why not try to just get that dead money and go up against a guy who's steaming? And the guy who's steaming would be great if he had, like, a, you know, a pocket pair that was smaller or something, because then we're crushing him on top of it.
Right, right.
So I like our odds with shoving.
Okay. Well, our hero decides to call. And the blinds get out of the way. I guess that's the other thing, too, is we get blinds behind us, but really at $65, I can't imagine. Unless somebody really wanted to squeeze us as well, too.
Yeah.
Three players to flop, one is all in, of course. 198 minus the rake in the pot. The flop comes the queen of hearts, jack of hearts, five of clubs.
Well, that's nice. Obviously, there's straight and flush draws here, though. We're not happy about that. Not that we're not happy about it. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, the right combination of cards could make our lives a 50-50 problem.
Well, it certainly makes this hand easier to play now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if the jack wasn't there, but the queen was there, that's the exact situation we were talking about.
Yeah.
And then if our opponent bets out, then what do you do at that point? Because now you're down to a two-outer to catch up if you believe that he has the queen, which is very likely that he would. But in this situation, our opponent bets 50 into us, so to me, I think this goes back to what we were talking about the flop. If we were really going to shove on the flop, why would you not want to shove now? You know, we get the set. I mean, if we're up against ace queen, that's beautiful. Now we just made it easier for him to call our all in.
Yeah, there's nothing in me that's just calling. I'm certainly shoving. I think a regular raise here just is committing pretty much your whole stack anyway. So you might as well just shove it. And, you know, $50. What could he have? You know, the pot's already 200, and we called, so he's got to know we have something. So what could he have to bet 50? That's interesting. But I don't really care. I mean, I'm getting my money in now because I have to protect my hand, too. You know, I'm not under any delusion that this guy would fold if he's got a piece of this now. But at the same time, I don't care. I don't want him to fold. Even if he has draws, I don't want him to fold. It's just a lot of times these hands end up badly, so you think, oh, something's coming, but I can't imagine us being behind, so and I can't imagine this guy folding if he's got anything, so I want him to call, so I'm shoving.
All right, that's exactly what our hero does. The villain agonizes for another full minute and folds face up, showing ace of hearts, king of hearts, with a nut flush draw, an unlikely straight draw. Wow.
Whoa, that's a... Wait, am I getting this right? That's a royal flush draw that he had?
Royal
he
flush it? Draw, yep.
Two overs, a royal flush draw, a Broadway draw, and he lets it go for...
Yeah.
What, one...
Let's see. We had 300 minus.
So it was 235, and then 50. So one, for 185 more, he has a royal flush draw and two overs and a Broadway draw. And he lets it go for 180 more when the pot's already bloated. Interesting. I could never have gotten away from that. I just could not have. Wow. And what's he waiting on to call preflop or re raise preflop with ace king of hearts?
Well, I'm wondering preflop, because here's the thing. It's not so much the how strong your hand is. It's trying to determine how the rest of the action and that preflop goes for you. You know what I mean? So, I mean, in a vacuum, when you have pocket aces, you're going to want to raise, right?
Yeah.
But that's probably a bad example because people slow play pocket aces. But, you know, if you want more people, it's the whole push and pull. If you want some more people in... You want it, you know, one more caller so you get some more money, you add value out of it, or you want to isolate. I think with a hand so strong as, you know, suited big slick that I'm not looking to isolate just the all-in. I would like to have somebody come along with me so I can make some more off of it. So that's probably, I could be wrong, but that's probably where the the thinking pre-flop was. And obviously on the flop, that's a... You know, they're trying to set the price kind of bet, which is perfect for that hand, right? You don't have anything right now. If you can get to the turn for $50, then that's perfect with that hand, right? You don't want to check and let the other guy shove on you. And...
Yeah. I don't.
But yeah, I don't know if I can fold there.
I don't know, and again, I don't know if I want other people in. I think Ace King can win on its own against a heads up on guy who's just on the steamer, but. If I have other players, now I'm dodging four cards. I'd rather just shove in my 300 being the big slack at the table and isolate. And then, hey, if I got the jacks to call, and I still got two overs.
Well, yeah, the other thing, too, is we don't know whether we were the big stack at the table.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
Somebody with 1,000, in the big blind, that you want to...
But even so, I mean, you were saying that you were considering just calling because you wanted other people to come along. I wouldn't want the $1,000 to come along unless I knew I was going to make... Whereas if I can isolate for 65...
I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying that would be a reason to think about it.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, folding here. Wow.
And then,
because here's the thing is we don't give him really any indication that we're anywhere near as strong as we are, right?
Right.
I mean, we called this bet preflop, so yeah, obviously we have something. But really, anything on this board, not just a... We don't even need the flush or the straight to hit a lot of hands that hit this board.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we're up against ace queen, we just need to hit our king.
Man, that's the other thing too is, tell me why anyone would bet 50 and then fold.
Yeah.
Why bet 50 and fold? If you think this guy's gonna shove on you if you don't bet 50, but if you bet 50, he might not shove because he might get scared that you bet 50. I don't know. That's a weird bet to me. It's like, if you're going to bet, then why fold after you bet? It'd be one thing if you bet $10 into a $60 pot.
Sure, right.
And a guy
right.
bets 500 or something. But why bet? Why even risk 50? And, I don't like the way this guy played his hand at all, to be honest. I don't really like Drew's call preflop, but he got 50 more bucks out of it so far. So... that's good. I don't know how he got this guy to...
Yeah, and I'd be interested to know whether if we shoved like you and I wanted to do, whether this guy would have came along.
Yeah, because we don't know his thought process. We don't know why he took that minute.
It'd be tough to throw that down.
Yeah. How do you let go of ace, king of hearts, in pre-flop, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm just the typical, hey, I got ace, king, it's great, and I'm shoving all the time.
Right,
I don't do that at all, hardly ever. I'm not gambit. But just kidding, Gambit. I've been like poking fun at Gambit like for 3 weeks, and he hasn't said anything. But no, really, really, I just it's a baffling middle position one player. Just baffling to me. I don't know how you do it, but okay. So what happened?
All right. Well, yeah, but anyhow, so he's out, right? So the turn card is the Six of Hearts.
Oh.
The river is the Nine of Diamonds.
Oh.
The other gun shows Seven of Hearts, Seven of Diamonds.
Oh, that's good. It was a little pair. But, oh, that Ace-King guy was just sick.
Yeah. But, you know, think about how many of these times that you fold the flush draw and it doesn't get there.
Yeah.
And you type yourself in the back, which is more often than when it gets there, obviously, statistically. So it's just the times that you fold it that it hurts more.
Yeah.
You look at that big pot that you could have there.
But the other thing, too, is let's say you were in his position. You would never put Drew on a set there.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's the real problem, I think, here is that, I mean, I could see people saying, you know what, that's too much money for a flush draw or a straight draw or overs or all the other outs that we gave us. But I think all those outs are good.
Yeah.
And there's really no reason to put them on a set there. Yeah. Just really, I mean, that's the monster under the bed scenario there.
Yeah. Any ace, any 10, any king, any heart, you think, in this situation is good. And pretty much that is all good, except for the ace and the king. So... Oh, I can't imagine folding. I can't imagine the way this guy played this hand. But I just play differently than some people. I don't know. I play terrible.
Right. Well, and we also don't know the situations, too. I mean, maybe this is this guy's first time playing 1-2 and bought him for 100. He's up to 300, and he's ecstatic, you know?
Yeah.
All those kind of weird things that come to play that obviously can't be conveyed in the hand of the week or even at the table. You don't know, obviously, all that stuff. So... But based on what we have here, yeah, it's a mind-boggler.
Well, Drew, thanks for sending us in that hand. And, you know, hey, love to see you on another cruise, buddy. Had a lot of fun with you when you were there and your dad, too. So, all right, well, that was another good show. Scott, thanks for coming back alive. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It. Didn't want to have to do both ends of the business without you. So, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.